This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. I am joined today in the JPR studios by Rhett Miller, and you have brought someone special along with you today.
She is so special. Annalisa Tornfelt is here with me all the way from Portland, Oregon.
Welcome back.
Hi.
I believe it was about a year ago you were here with BlackBerry.
Yeah,
it's nice to see you. This is not just a partnership that is convenient for today. BlackBerry is essentially the band with you on your new record.
Oh, yeah, very much. It's credited. It's Rhett Miller with BlackBerry on the album. And it's funny, too, because when Chris Funk, who's the dobro player and sort of Ersatz band leader, is that unfair? I mean, the band is so egalitarian. There's not really a band leader. But on this record, he was the producer, so he did boss us around a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But when Funk first said, would you consider making it, you know, billing it as, you know, with BlackBerry or and BlackBerry? And I thought, like, I have a little bit of OCD, and I've always gotten really weird about my album titles. You know, Rhett Miller, the instigator, Rhett Miller, the believer, Rhett Miller, the dreamer. And I was like, that's going to mess up the whole thing. It was really bothering me. And then as we were recording, I was listening to the playback and I was thinking like, oh my God, this is so me and BlackBerry. It would be ridiculous not to credit BlackBerry in the, you know, in the top line of the liner notes, because it was so much a collaboration. And I felt so lucky to get to play with these guys.
Well, you're a Dallas guy, correct?
I grew up in Dallas. I live now in the Hudson Valley, just north of Manhattan.
Okay.
I spent some time in Manhattan and in Los Angeles. So I've bounced around a bunch.
Because you've surrounded yourself with a bunch of Oregonians for this new record.
I feel so smart. Like I nailed something right on the head. Like this, there's something I really feel like that's really magical about Oregon in general, and I've had a lot of fun in Portland. I think, you know, there's a game we play in the old 97s, which is the band I'm in. You know, I've spent a lot of years on tour. There's a game we play called the I Could Live Here game, you know, and there's a lot of towns you go through that I won't name where you're like, oh, I could never live here. But I've never encountered a town as much as Portland where I just felt like, oh, I could really live here.
So how did the partnership come about? I mean, you must have known of each other before going into the studio to record.
Well, BlackBerry we were sort of hooked up for a short run in the Northeast. And they were playing before, which is a little crazy now that I think about it, you know, such a multi-membered band playing before I did solo acoustic shows. But Chris reached out to me and said, hey, would you want to do some songs together at the end of your set? And it was great for me, too, because, you know, it's hard to follow any band, but especially BlackBerry, which is just so musically gifted. Like everybody, as players, they're all so good. And then the material's so good. And Annalisa as a singer is so great. And then I get up there, it's just me and a guitar. And I know that I had the benefit of the audience being there specifically maybe to see me because I'm the headliner, but still just sonically, it's rough. So when they got up and played with me at the end of the set every night for that week in the Northeast, it was just so beautiful. I mean, because they're such a great band. But on top of that, you know, we'd hang out after the shows every night. We'd go out and Nate, the bass player, is really great at knowing where to go eat. I mean, they're all pretty good about that. But like midnight snacks are like a big thing for BlackBerry. So we'd go out every night and drink some beers and have late night sandwiches or whatever it was. And I just really loved them as people. And I wanted immediately to figure out a way to work together. And it took a couple of years. But when the 97s had finished Most Messed Up, our most recent record, and we had this batch of leftover songs that they didn't want, and they were these really pretty songs. And I thought, oh my God, this is my chance. And jumped on it. And the timing worked out and everybody was available. And we spent about a week and a half in Portland in Jackpot Studios making the record. And most of what you hear is live off the floor.
Mm. Okay, so when you're out on tour as Rhett Miller, you're not always solo. Sometimes it's Rhett Miller with a band, right?
Yeah.
But the band then is not Old 97s. So what happens to Rhett Miller's band when you're out supporting the record that you made with BlackBerry?
Well, now we're going to get into the harsh realities of the music business in the middle of the, you know, 20-teens, which is, I used to take a band out a lot when there was more money in the business. When record labels had deficit tour support and we'd all be on a bus together and it was, you know, I'd be promoting an album that sounded like a rock band with a rock band playing with me. It's been a few years since I could really afford to do that, just because, you know, I got a couple of kids and they insist on eating every day, which I had not anticipated. But
they're pesky that way.
Yeah. So the last few years, I haven't really been able to take out. I had the Instigators for a while, and then I had another band called the Believers that I really loved, and then they became the Serial Lady Killers, and then for the last 3 or 4 years. I just haven't been able to make it work logistically to take a band out. And even with this record, my dream, you know, my real dream was to take out all of Black Prairie. And then I was looking into really just taking out John Neufeld and Annalisa Tornfeldt, the non-Decemberist members of Black Prairie. And even just the logistics of that with everybody's schedules and then the bottom lines being what they are, it just made it really hard to make it work.
Rhett Miller is my guest live today in the JPR studios. He is joined by Annalisa Tornfeldt. The new record is called The Traveler. It's Rhett Miller with Black Prairie. What do you guys want to play first?
Most in the Summertime. That is it's our anthem right now. 1, 2, 3. We drove a powder blue pickup truck to the edge of town. We had a picnic on a blanket on a hill as the sun beat down. I pulled you close and took your little hand in mine. I think I love you most in the summertime. Don't give up on me. Don't give up on me. We were sleeping in a state park underneath the camper shell. Barometric pressure going crazy. It was raining like hell. My fingers found a notch as on your spine. I think I love you most in the summertime. Don't give up on me. Don't give up on me. Yeah, I think I love you most in the summertime. Got our clothes off, hanging on the line. I think I love you most in the summertime. And I just might make it as long as you're still mine. Pickup truck to the Greyhound stop. You bought a $12 ticket and a $2 bottle of pop. I pulled you close and lied that I'd be fine. I think I love you most in the summertime. Don't give up on me. Don't give up on me. Yeah, I think I love you most in the summertime. Got our clothes off, hanging on the line. Woo! I think I love you most in the summertime. And I just might make it long as you're still mine. And I just might make it as long as you're still mine. Think I love you most in the summertime. time.
That is Rhett Miller with Annalisa Tornfelt. Most in the Summertime. It's from the new record of Rhett Miller with Black Prairie called The Traveler. Information at rhettmiller.com. All right, let me clear up one thing. You have mentioned the band, and of course we should give credit to Old 97s. But what I want to clear up is it the Old 97s or is it Old 97s?
It's just Old 97s.
Because it's so often wrong, it's both in right print now. And the way we say it online. We just want to be correct. It is the band Old 97s, right?
Yeah, it is just Old 97s, and I don't know why. You know, Murray, our bass player, is a big Train buff, and he talked me into it years ago. Obviously, you know, we've been a band now for 21 years, and we were trying to come up with band names, and we'd had all these terrible bands before. Well, not, you know, they're pretty good, but the band names were bad. Rhett's Exploding as an example of a really bad band name we'd had. And But he, you know, he told me, he's like, just think about it. It's like Joe Strummer's first band, the 101ers. It's kind of cool. You know, it's the Johnny Cash had the hit with the record of the Old 97. And so that's what we're named after. But I think I asked for no pronoun because I felt like, you know, it becomes a third. You know, there's only six characters, OLD97S. If you add THE, that's like a full third of the name. It's just this pronoun that doesn't do anything.
You mentioned the different songs and how there was a group of songs for Old 97's record, and what was left over became songs that you worked up. How do you deal? I mean, it's been 20 years, right? Yeah. How do you deal with that separation between the identity of Rhett Miller with Old 97s and Rhett Miller, the solo performer?
There was a time when it was really weird. You know, after we made Satellite Rides in about 2000, I had a really big pile of songs that I was kind of upset that the band wasn't into. But I had sort of gotten past the idea that I could really change the band to fit the songs that they didn't like. And I'd, you know, we had a record called Fight Songs that was called Fight Songs because I was really trying to, I think, I don't know, manipulate the band into being something other than what it was, you know. And in a lot of ways, it was good for us because the band kind of grew and they learned a lot about themselves, I think, during that time. And, you know, were able to get into songs that they maybe wouldn't have before. But at a certain point, they're like, all right, this is what we are. You know, we're never gonna like this pile of songs that you have on that we rejected. And so I asked for their permission to make solo records. And when I started making solo records, I was really aware of the battlefield that was littered with the corpses of lead singers that had tried to go in onto solo careers, you know? And so I thought, I have to really be conscious of making albums that will immediately let the listener know, oh, this is why he had to make a solo record. If it sounded like an Old 97s record, then what's the point? Mm-hmm. So the first two or three solo records I made, you know, since going back into having a solo career, because I did make one in high school that I kind of try to gloss over because it was embarrassing.
Because of the bad hair back then?
No, the hair was the same. It was just I had a British accent.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I was listening to only David Bowie and Aztec Camera, and I sang like David Bowie and Aztec Camera. So I was a kid. What do you
mean? I need a copy of that.
It's apparently it sells on eBay for a lot of money. But so I... over all the years, it kind of, the audience got okay with it. Like there was less of a threat posed to the Old 97s by my solo career. And somehow the Old 97s became really cemented as this kind of garage rock band where we had done a lot of different things before. Now what we do is pretty much this one thing. It's like this really kind of loud, raw, you know, rock and roll thing, which is nice for me because it leaves a lot of room for me to make records that speak more to like maybe the gentler, prettier, more Americana side of my songwriting, and which is another reason why it was so great to work with Black Prairie, because that's just right in their wheelhouse.
And Rhett Miller's solo albums definitely have less profanity on them.
Yeah.
For which we say thank you. Usually when a lyric comes along like pickup truck, we get nervous for what's coming next. So thank you for that. Not necessarily this record per se, but across multiple records, there are a number of themes, one of which is traveling, like a journey. And certainly it's captured in the title of the new record. But it's not just about a physical journey. Sometimes it's an emotional journey or a spiritual journey in your songs. Another theme that pops up often is the relationship to drink in a bunch of different ways. Are those two things that are kind of central in your own life, or are you writing about those two different things as a narrator, like an outside viewpoint?
Well, both. You know, if I lived every lyric in every song that I've released, I'd be dead, you know. But it's definitely something that I think about and grapple with. And, you know, but it's also, you know, drink is a vehicle like anything else. You know, it gets you from normal to weird, or it gets you from, you know, whatever. It's what it is. It's a means to an end. And yeah, it's something I've thought about a lot. And like the last 97's record really got into it in a less glamorous way than maybe I've dealt with it or than most people do deal with it. You know, the Let's Get Drunk and Get It On was definitely a sweet kind of fun song. But it was also, there was a bittersweet aspect to that. Intervention was, you know, it's what it sounds like. You know, it's a song about really, you know, having real problems with it. And and even though that song's kind of funny, you know, it's definitely something that in my family there's been a lot of addiction, and I'm sensitive to the reality of that in the lives of, you know, some of my friends and loved ones and stuff. And it's something I've thought about a lot too. So it's definitely right there. And but no, I don't have to actually live all of the songs. Thank God. Yeah. Oh, it would be so tough.
You know, you referenced it earlier, and a lot of musicians that we have here in the studio talk about the changes that have occurred in the music business, to labels, to, you know, the money that's advanced for touring and things like that. You know, people like Colin Hay that have been here, who, you know, 1982 stadiums and how the world has changed. Has the rock star lifestyle component of being a professional musician changed along with the rest of the industry? Or, you know, and certainly you're 20 years older than you were when you started out, and you've got kids now and a home and a family. But from your perspective, like, does that part change as well? Or is that just still going on as young guys get into the business?
I think even with the, well, there used to be such a lottery ticket aspect. Like when you start a band, there's a chance that you get to be the band that makes $1 million or $3 million, $100 million, whatever. That has sort of disappeared. And I think that's good for music because it takes the sort of gold digger aspect out of the whole thing, you know? So the people that are making music are the people that really are meant to make music and driven to make music and do it because they love it and not because they're hoping to get rich. I do think that there's something societal in this job. You know, it's not as if you have carte blanche to walk into any room and just ravish any woman. But there is something about this job that makes it more likely that you're going to, you know, go home with somebody. You know, and I think that that'll always be the case. And I think that that's the way it should be. I think it's a beautiful thing. But that's also because... and sorry, Annalisa, I'm talking from only a male perspective. I think that probably, you know, a woman with a guitar not unlike yourself could, but I think you don't have to have a guitar. I think that with guys, it definitely helps a lot because women have all the power in that transaction, maybe. Is that true? Am I being a pig?
You don't need to tone down because you noticed I was sitting here.
Oh, God. So, yeah, I mean, I love rock and roll, but there's a line in... the song on the 97's newest record, Longer Than You've Been Alive. The rock stars were once such mythical creatures up there with presidents, playmates, and preachers. And it's true. It was a different job before. And I think it's better for having lost some of that, you know, BS aspect where everybody's just, you know, pretending that they're a golden god when in fact they're just a, you know, person. And I definitely think it's lame when rock and rollers think that they're above everyone else just because they get up on a stage.
Rhett Miller is my guest today live in the JPR studios, whose new record is called The Traveler. It's Rhett Miller with Black Prairie. And joining Rhett Miller today is Annalisa Tornfelt from Black Prairie. And we're going to switch gears a little bit because, Annalisa, you have a brand new record out, or just about out as well.
I do. It's called The Number 8, and I recorded it in Portland with Mike Kirkendall at his studio, Blue Room Studios.
And you have a nickel harpa on the back.
The nickel harpa
super
is
cool
on the back, yeah. Peter Buck had a nickel harpa, and I was on the hunt for one. And, you know, Chris Funk from Black Prairie called Peter, and Peter's like, you know, I'm not in the States right now, but my friend Scott McCoy is recording right down the street from where you guys were recording a record at the time. And so his buddy Scott brought it over to the studio where we were doing our Black Prairie record. And in return for the nickel harpa, I have to play on every solo Peter Buck record for my entire life, which I think is a pretty good deal.
He just finished a new one, right? Are you all over it then?
The nickel harpa is the only instrument on Peter Buck's new solo. No, I'm just joking. I wish. I am on the new record. That's yeah, awesome. And I get to play nickel harpa on it too.
And you played nickel harpa on my record that
I
we
do.
Just made.
Yeah, we did, so we did Fair Enough with the nickel harpa. That's right. It's really pretty.
And your new record is so beautiful, Annalisa, the number 8. I'm so glad that you're going to play us a song, right?
Yeah, you're going to actually
Thanks.
Take the lead on this one, right?
Yes, I'm going to play one of, Rhett, you told me you liked this one, so I'm going to do it for you. It's called Take Care of You.
That is Annalisa Tornfelt live in the JPR studios, a song from her brand new record called The Number 8. She's here live along with Rhett Miller, whose new record is The Traveler that he recorded with Black Prairie. That is why Annalisa Tornfelt is here today. Rhett, you have now, beautiful song, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to hearing the record. I'm glad that you brought me a copy. Thank you.
That song makes me cry. It's just so sweet.
Thanks, Rhett. You guys.
It's like a mutual admiration society.
I know. I love the idea of you singing a baby to sleep. Like, how lucky would that freaking baby be? Jeez.
Yes, he is very lucky.
Rhett, you have now got 20 or so studio records, a couple of live albums, and in addition to that, you've also got your eye on writing fiction?
I've been doing some. I've had more short stories than anything. I dream of longer form fiction. I did have a lot of fun. I've been writing some book reviews for Book Forum lately, which is a sort of hoity-toity book review quarterly. And then I wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated at the end of last, or no, I guess it was the beginning of this year. During the NFL playoffs, they were interested in my grandfather's failed ownership of an NFL franchise. He was the last NFL franchise owner to fail. It was right before the TV contracts kicked in, and it was miserable. It was horrible. There was family money before 1952, and then the Dallas Texans blew it all. I could have been a rich kid. Instead, I got to wag around the country playing my guitar.
Speaking of guitars, Rhett, I'd already planned on asking you about your, what is it, Gibson J200.
Yeah,
it right?
is. Yes.
How did you come to acquire such a beautiful guitar?
The musicians in the audience, the listening audience, are going to get mad at me. But I have a deal with Gibson where they've given me some guitars over the years. They gave me a really beautiful Hummingbird. They gave me a Songwriter. And I've loved those guitars. And then a couple of years ago, they were putting together a 100th anniversary for their J200 model, this guitar that I've got here. And I'd never played a jumbo-style guitar before. I don't know why. I just never had. I had always preferred the Dreadnought style, which is a slightly smaller, more classical, acoustic-looking guitar. So this big event was going to happen in Austin, Texas, and I'd set aside the date. And at the last minute, I think Emmy Lou couldn't make it. And so the whole thing got scrapped. For want of an Emmy Lou, the whole concert was canceled. Yeah. And I really didn't think anything else of it. None of us were going to get paid, but we were all supposed to get these anniversary edition J200s, but the concert never happened. And I didn't, like I said, didn't think twice about it. And about a year went by, and I got a call from my Captain Mark, my Gibson guy. And he said, are you going to be home at a certain date? And I said, sure. I didn't know. I thought maybe they're going to send me some straps or something. And this beautiful blonde J200 showed up. And he said, we felt really bad that you'd set aside the date and the concert never happened. So here's the J200. And it's weird because, like, you know, I'm old. I don't, you know, I'm 44. Like, I don't learn new things. And to find out now that this jumbo-style guitar was really the guitar I'd always wanted.
And probably should have been playing all along.
Maybe should have been playing all along. I chose not to be frustrated by this revelation and just instead to be happy, because I'm so happy. This is like my baby now.
And how fortuitous, because as I understand, you had gotten to a point with your wife that you were not allowed to buy any more guitars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I could probably work something out if I got rid of some. I could maybe get a new one. But the fact that, the fact that they gave me this really got me around that. It was a nice loophole.
And Annalisa, you have a fiddle in your hands at the moment, but you have brought in a guitar that looks like it might have toppled out of a rail car at some point.
Yes.
What is this?
So this is an Archcraft, and it's like a Sears and Roebuck catalog guitar from around 1930s or so. And I have a postcard of, you know, the Carter family, and Maybelle Carter is playing a guitar that looks exactly like it, and I just thought it was the most beautiful thing. My husband, John McDonald, he buys vintage guitars and that are unplayable, and then he'll refurbish them and fix them up. So he will always bring them up from the basement and put them in my arms. He wants to hear what they sound like. I couldn't bear to part with it ever since then. I call her Black Beauty.
Mm. Have you gone back into those catalogs to see what the original sale price was for something like that?
Oh, I would love to do that. I haven't done that yet.
$7.
Yeah, right.
That's like the great irony of all that stuff, is that the guitars now that we all find the most magical are the guitars that were sold in catalogs. And, you know, it's the equivalent of what's now like the, you know, Toys R Us first act guitar, which I would never buy a kid one of those.
That is what this used to be then.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like what you'd buy your kid for Christmas if you weren't sure they would really continue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your husband, Johnny, what he's doing is, to me, it's one of the most special things you can do is to rescue these instruments in an era where everything is built so disposably. And he's taking things that could have been forgotten or thrown on a trash pile and making them back into a functioning, beautiful piece of art, you know.
It's really special.
Does he sell any of them online, or do they stay within the family and friends group?
Oh, well...
they all go to
Japan.
Well,
they have to go through me first, you see. So,
and but, that's what he does. Because Annalisa, if you sit in behind a guitar playing it, you don't hear what it sounds like for maybe for real or whatever in front of it. So Annalisa will play it. How lucky is this guy? The baby gets sung to sleep, and Johnny gets to sit and listen to her play guitar.
Yes, don't be jealous, Rhett.
Rhett Miller and Annalisa Tornfelt are my guests live today in the JPR studios. They both got new records out. The Traveler is Rhett Miller's that he recorded with Black Prairie. Annalisa Tornfelt's new record is called The Number 8. It has been a pleasure, Rhett, to have you in. And Annalisa, I was so happy to hear that you were able to come down with him today.
Thank you.
One last question before we wrap with a song. You got to tell me about the Rhett Miller Show. Wheels off. What is this thing?
It's for the last two or three years, mostly down at the Club Largo in Hollywood. I've been doing a variety show. I've taken it up to San Francisco to the SF Sketch Fest, which is a really great comedy festival. The New York City Winery, I've brought it there, especially around the holidays. For instance, my Christmas show at the New York City Winery last year was Jen Kirkman, who's this really great comedian, and Wyatt Cenac, who came to prominence on The Daily Show.
Sure.
And this guy, Dave Hill, who is a comedian, who we were just listening to his brand new comedy album that he just released on our drive down today. You know, I've had Nicole Atkins comes and I'm lucky enough to, over the years, I've gotten to be friends with a bunch of comedians and obviously musicians. And so I just bring them out and I'll do a few songs and then let them do, you know, comedy or a few songs. And it's in the style of an old variety show. And I call it Wheels Off because there's usually a bar set up on stage and, you know, we pop the cork on a champagne bottle and there's whiskey and everybody gets a little bit wheels off.
We need to try to organize one of those around here.
I'll do it.
Let's do that. Rhett Miller is my guest today in the studio with help today from Annalisa Tornfelt. Rhett Miller's new record that he recorded with Black Prairie is called The Traveler. Annalisa Tornfelt has a new record out as well called The Number 8. Guys, again, thanks so much for coming in. What do you want to wrap up with?
How about the opening track off of The Traveler, a song called Wanderlust?
One, two, three, four. Down the dip, it's always something, it's always something with you. 334 Long Island Railroad, I've had a carload of you. Wanderlust will beat the death of us. Wanderlust. Down the track, I'm facing backward, I'm moving forward with you. I'll be around, I found a fault line, I'll make good time to you. Wanderlust will beat the death of us. Wanderlust. It won't take much, oh, just a little push and a little bit of wanderlust. Shot. What is it good for? I'll make it one more for me. 34. 12 hours later, don't hate the traitor, that's me. Wanderlust will be the death of us. Wanderlust. Yeah, it won't take much. Oh, just a little push and a little bit of wanderlust. Wanderlust will be the death of us. Wanderlust. Just a little push and a little bit of wanderlust. Yeah, just a little bit of wanderlust. That
is Rhett Miller live today in the JPR studios with help from Annalisa Tornfeld of Black Prairie. Rhett Miller's new record with Black Prairie is called The Traveler. Annalisa Tornfeld's new record just out is called The Number 8. Rhett, Annalisa, thanks again for coming by.
Thanks for having us. It's such an honor to be here in Oregon where this record got birthed.
Yes, thank you so much, Eric.